Howdy.
Hello.
Hello, not up yet. Howdy.
She said spontaneous.
Yeah, it's good to see y'all. I just ran in the room. But it's good to see you. And I think I'm just going to turn it right over to Ken and let him play us the song. What'd you select, Ken?
From Kalyani Bliss, Held by an Angel.
From Kalyani Bliss. She's the one who was at our retreat with John Mark Stroud?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's why I thought that sounded familiar. And what was the song? I already forgot.
Held by an Angel.
Held by an Angel. Here we go. teach now. I just want to be still. Wow.
Beautiful.
That was gorgeous. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. But I will go ahead and do my thing because I know that's what everybody else is expecting of me. But I could just leave. So hi, everyone. And I hope you all enjoyed that song as much as I did. Unfortunately, for me, I get to be quiet first. I do get to listen to you all. You're always up first for sharing. This week you can share from Workbook Lessons 222 to 228. And, of course, the Choose Again videos, as well as if anybody tried Choose Again. I'd love to hear about that if you tried that process with your own upset. You can also just share on anything at all that's related to gentle healing, even if it didn't come directly from this week's homework. So, who would like to get us started? Ken. Ooh, you're never first. You threw me off.
I know.
Okay.
Curveball.
Curveball.
Well, this morning we had our appointments with the Colorado Department of Revenue. Also known to us from California, DMV, to get our licenses switched from California to Colorado. And reading all the stuff that they said we had to have, we thought we had everything. And we both get in, and the first question, got your passport or your birth certificate? And we're going, no. Okay, well, what else do you got? Okay, here's your list of things you need to go home and get. If you come back today, just come back to the person you talked to and not have to wait in line again. So we came home, and Rebecca very quickly found her passport and her information. Mine is still in the black hole of who knows where.
Boxes packed all in the
boxes,
basement.
Boxes, garage, wherever. And it was that kind of perfect storm of, okay, you can find your paperwork, but not mine. And just had to sit there and go, is that true? And watch good. Listening to the Choose Again of is this a familiar, which is exactly the instructions you got over, what was it, rejectable?
Rejection, yeah.
Of, are you familiar with this feeling?
Yes.
Well, of course I am. You know, not important, not whatever. And in a short while, it went away, and then it just, the peace returned with no residual, which there's generally residual resentment, and this time it was just returned to peace as if it had never happened, and didn't have to use any of my little keywords of this is just an experience and all the rest, accept and trust. It just happened. Of course, all the other stuff, the Choose Again and all that, is playing in the background. And the, is this really worth your peace? That was the real question that was going on. You are in peace. Is this worth your peace? Now, Rebecca's license expires tomorrow. And the people there says, oh, no problem. You know, we don't care. We realize you're new here. You have a year. Well, what about the state police? They have a different interpretation, so they may not agree with us. Ah, wonderful.
I guess what they mean is they're not going to fine you, maybe, or something
we
like that.
We don't know.
No, the DMV or the...
Yeah,
is not
Department of Revenue wasn't going to find it, but the police may write a ticket. So it was, can we please go back and at least get my license? And it was perfect peace.
Yeah.
To just go, okay, I've got till December. If we can't find my stuff by then, I just, well... get a new birth certificate.
Yeah, you can always write and get a birth certificate.
Yeah. And that's easy.
Yeah.
know, $7, $10, $15, whatever.
But you might need to find your passport before next October.
You think?
Yeah, if you're going to go to Israel. Yeah, you're going to need that.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, is Rebecca sent up all that stuff in an envelope when I came up here early so that I could go get my license. But then when we decided to buy a house, I'm going, why don't I, you know, we'll just wait until we have a real address and then go do it. Well, in the move, that perfect envelope, I knew exactly where it was, went into the black hole of boxes.
Yeah, from the rental house to the purchase
house.
To
here, black hole of boxes.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, good. Thank you for sharing. Thank you very much. Who else would like to share?
I'll share.
All right, come over here. Here, I'll trade you seats. That way you won't have to bend over.
Maybe okay.
You don't mind, but I'm conscious of bending over right now.
It's going to come up to regarding lesson 228. But the first is, again, my health. I have a belief that insomnia and brain problems, like forgetfulness and stuff, it makes it almost impossible to make progress on this path. And I keep going round and round, and I feel like I'm not, I feel that I'm stuck, and this feeling that I'm stuck keeps me, that I'm not consistent in my practice, even though I want it a lot, but I guess I get stuck. And it's easy to find proof that what I'm saying is true, that the belief is true, because even Michael Langford recommended, I think it's 12 books to read to keep the brain healthy. So when I feel that my brain is not healthy, it's hard, you know, it's hard for me to think that I can awaken. Because that's what Michael Langford said. If you don't have a good brain, it's harder to awaken.
Actually, so, that's not what he said.
Okay.
I correct you right
okay,
now.
Correct me.
Okay. He said that if you don't have a good brain, it's harder to remember like the quotes and things you read that inspired you in the practice instructions. So
okay.
you may, for example, read a quote that really, really inspires you, and if you could hold that quote in your mind, it would help you to practice.
Yeah. Right.
But because your brain is not working so well, you forget the quote.
Right.
My solution to that is to write the quote down.
Right.
But he did not say could not awaken.
Okay.
That was an interpretation.
I heard it in such a way, and with my brain, the ego changed it. So anyway, the insomnia, that's what also makes it really, really hard, because maybe I'll sleep decent one night out of seven. So, and then I listened to Byron Katie last week about the works about this lady that had insomnia, and what Byron Katie told this lady is to not label it as insomnia. She said, not sleeping is normal for you. So if I say, okay, not sleeping is normal for me, and accept that as normal, then I'm not making a problem with it. So anyway, that was last week. So the lesson today, 228, God has condemned me not, no more do I. And I contemplated that. And the tips were very good. Regina's tips were really good, too. And this is what I got. If I identify with the ego, I do condemn myself. Reflect on my words today. Nothing can change who you are. Nothing can hurt you. Only your beliefs can seem to hurt you and cause suffering. Stay close to me. Read Luke 13. And you know, that was a reminder, because I have prompts to read Luke 13 before, and then it went away. Practice my teaching. My word is for everyone. There is no exception. Only a belief in exception can hinder your healing. For example, if I have insomnia or brain problems, that's an exception. I can't heal because I have that. So he's telling me, it's only the belief that can hinder my healing. There is no exception. So waste not your time in futile worry. Futile? Mm-hmm. Press forward each day, giving me that little willingness, and I will use it to set you free. Amen. So then I did go to Luke 13, and what I read the whole chapter about what stayed with me the most, what jumped at me, what I need to keep in my pocket, is if you find, if you can find but a bit of willingness to see the Son of God, and so not to judge that, that is enough. And if each time you notice your judgments, you give your willingness in whatever measure it may seem to be, that is enough. I bless you with my gratitude each time you give me but the smallest of your willingness, for each small measure is like fertilizer. It is useful to me in the healing of your heart. So a little willingness, even if I do it, I have a bad day, I do it three times that day. That's three times that I'm not listening to my ego. Mm-hmm. And that's three times that Holy Spirit can help me. And if I don't do that, then it can't help me. There was another part that struck me if you watch a little child when it is learning something new, you will notice that the learning itself does not seem to come from the child's effort. The practice is but an expression of the child's willingness to learn. The learning itself seems to come upon the child like a miracle, and suddenly the child can do what it could not do before. So how that helps me is the ego wants us to believe it requires a lot of effort. And when we don't feel good, like I get up tired and I think, oh my God, it's going to take so much effort to do this work. It's hard to put a lot of effort in our practice, but if I can keep the reminder in my pocket that Holy Spirit can use as a fertilizer, whatever measure of willingness I give him, that doesn't seem to be overwhelming. So it is that little willingness. It's not the effort. So that's what I have to remember. The other thing I did is I brought that to Byron Katie One Belief at a Time worksheet. And I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but I'm just going to read the turnaround. So the original thing was my brain issues and insomnia are blocks to my awakening. So my turnaround is my brain issues and insomnia are not blocks to my awakening. And it's said to give three specific and genuine examples of how the turnaround is true for you in this situation. So the first example is there are times when I am very aligned with my true self. Like during meditation, when I listen to teachings that really resonate with me at retreats. The second example would be when I practice rest, accept, and trust, and I can sometimes align with my truth. This one is very, I have a lot of resistance when I don't feel good because that's when the beliefs are the strongest. But it's doable. The third one is when I choose to carry the message of the day in my pocket and I remember to practice as frequently as I think about it. So those are all times that, that the insomnia and the brain issues are not blocks to my awakening. So then I look at this and say, which one is truer? My brain issues and insomnia are blocks to my awakening, or my brain issues and insomnia are not blocks to my awakening? And as I look at that right now, I have to say that my brain issues and insomnia are not blocks to my awakening. That's not a full belief, but it's an opening.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And all right, so I see Lori has her hand up. So Lori.
Joanne.
Sorry, I was looking at this screen and I don't see Joanne on that screen.
Right, she's over
That's
here.
That's interesting. Okay, Joanne seems to be first, so Joanne, the mic is yours. That's weird.
Good evening. It's been months since I've shared something, and well, Tuesdays have become not always the best night for me, and then during the summer I traveled a lot, but I am so thankful for the recordings because I am still in the game and, and loving it. So I do listen to everything every week, and I still feel connected to you all. I'm just not always here when you're here. But one thing I wanted to share is, you know, Dietrich's six steps. I haven't been exposed to Dietrich. I know he was here in St. Louis maybe last year, the year before, but again, I was traveling. My summers are pretty packed. And so this was, you know, this kind of rang to me. So I would like to share a couple of Dietrich, you know, a couple of the things I did using the six steps. So I have to, so okay, I dictate this stuff. So I'm going to read it, and I may stumble, you know, because of poor spelling or something. Anyway, we have a rift going on in our family. Two of my brothers do not get along with my oldest brother. And then one night, you know, I wrote this the morning after. So last night, the two brothers visited to fill me in on the status of things. And at one point, I could see one of them in pain. He said, "I do not count." And I felt emotion there then. So this day then, you know, today, I use the six steps to choose again on this emotion. So number one, I am upset. I feel sad when I see David hurt. Number two, this only comes from me. This does not come from an outside circumstance. My emotion comes from me. Number three, when I heard David say that he does not count, I really looked at that word. It brought up to me feelings of rejection, unimportance. His comment meant, I do not have value. I'm not worth the time. And then number four, this feeling is familiar to me. When I was about in about seventh or eighth grade, my quote best friend would run away from me at recess. It was not an occasional behavior. It happened routinely. And when I would go toward her, she'd run away. So I was rejected, and I remember how upset I would be. Number five, I forgive me for believing I do not matter. I forgive me for believing I am not lovable. I forgive me for believing I don't count. I forgive me for believing I am rejectable. I forgive me for believing I have no value. I forgive me for believing I'm not worth the time. And then number six, I took on an identity at that time because of what was happening to me in order to make sense of the environment and the situation I didn't understand. And that's not, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not serving me now. But now this identity is not serving me anymore. I choose to change my mind about this. So a couple days go by, and I'm still feeling anxiety about David, okay? So I ask inner wisdom, why do I feel anxiety when I think about David? And so I went through it again. Number one, I feel anxiety when I think about David. Number two, this anxiety is all about me. It is not about the external circumstances. This is my responsibility to correct. The world is not doing this to me. I am feeling anxious because of my belief system. Number three, I feel anxiety because when I think that David might believe that I don't think he counts. David did say we were defensive. You know, this was within a big conversation. So our response was not what he expected. I thought about calling him and talking to him, but that also made me feel anxious. Number four, yes, I have felt this anxiety many times before. I feel it when I think someone I care about thinks of me in a bad light. I care about or value what people think about me. I want everyone to think positively about me. I feel anxiety when I think someone thinks negatively about me. So what does this say about me? This tells me that I feel anxiety when a belief I have is triggered. When someone thinks of me in a bad light, it confirms in my mind the belief that maybe I am bad, that I'm not loyal, that I'm biased, that I am closed-minded. In actuality, I am feeling anxiety based on the judge I have placed on what David thinks. I judge that David thinks bad of me, and that makes me anxious. This is all about me, and I still hold on to the belief system that I am a person in this world. Number five, I forgive me for believing I can be viewed as bad. I forgive me for believing it is important that other people value me. I forgive me for believing I'm a person in this world. I forgive me for believing that I am a failure at the spiritual stuff because I got defensive, came from ego. I forgive myself or me for believing that, see, I'm not good because I come from ego, even after all of the spiritual work. And then number six, sometime along my world path, I took on the belief that I had to be thought of positively by everyone. There's nothing wrong with taking on this belief, because that's what you do. That's what I did in my world path or something like that. While it may have served a purpose from time to time, it's not serving me any longer. Therefore, I want to change the way I think. I want to fully embrace the understanding that what I see in the world has nothing to do with what I am really. What I see in the world does not affect what I am truly. What I see in the world, the circumstances of the world, does not tarnish my perfection. So inner wisdom, should I call David? And the response was, you're feeling much more comfortable now. Your anxiety is subsided. But I still suggest you sit on it a little longer and ask me again when you are clearer. And that's it. I would like, you know, to know if I'm using that process right. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Joanne. It sounded pretty good. What I will do when it's my turn to share first is I will cover the process, and you can listen. For instance, at one point, I think you were saying number five. The first time you went through, you were saying number five, and what you were sharing, if you were trying to match the steps, actually came from number six. So what I'll do is but still, it worked for you. You did a good job. But what I'll do is I'll share the process myself, and so you can kind of look and take notes if you need to do any slight tweaking. But based on just seeing that little bit of video, I think you did an excellent job with the process. Lori, the mic is yours. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, Lori. Just wanted to see if you still wanted the mic. Your hand is up. I'll release one more time and see if you... Oh, sorry, having trouble with the speakers. Need a long... Okay, we'll wait till she comes back. She left. So, is there anyone else who would like to speak? Okay, looks like Lori is back. Lori, would you like to try it again? I'm going to release the mic for you.
Click and hold.
Yay! Oops. We heard click and hold.
Oh, there we go. Sorry, I guess I have to hold it down. Yay. To speak. I just wanted to share a, I guess it's kind of an insight, but that happened the other day, but still, there's still not total clarity around it. And it's kind of similar to what Joanne just talked about. I was noticing that I was starting to distance myself from a friend because she just seemed so angry, and I felt myself just, this feeling of uncomfortableness and wanting to distance. And then, I sort of had this realization, I have a certain image of my friend Gail, and she's not meeting that image. And so, therefore, the anxiety is coming up because, in one of the readings, I guess I was doing, it talks about how that can happen, that we form an image in our mind, in our imagination. And then when that image, when people don't meet this imaginary image, this self becomes, feels insecure and off balance by that. And so when I realized that, how could anybody live up to an image in my head? When I dropped that, then the anxiety and fear went away because she could just be who she was and there was no, the image kind of just dissolved. But then, and then shortly after, I had a friend call and on the phone, and he said, Lori, is everything okay? You don't sound like your usual bubbly self. And, I just kind of had to laugh because, he had an image of me, right? And is it realistic that somebody would always be a bubbly self? and obviously feeling a bit anxious that I wasn't meeting his image. So that it seemed to be, I was noticing that, but then I noticed I still have this thing keep coming back with my friend, and I haven't called or reached out because it's like I have to continually try and let go of this image, and then it comes back. So I'm not really sure, and then trying to, apply the different things, resting, accepting, trusting. Yeah, but it's all intellectual, I guess, because it really... the feelings keep coming up, and I'm not actually sure what to do. So I'm at this point, I'm just noticing that this is what continues to arise. And I also wanted to add, I've never seen those six steps before, and I find it really interesting. And I was looking at some of the other videos as well that they had, especially in regards to how it relates or doesn't relate to the 12-step program. So, releasing the mic. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I appreciate you sharing. We don't get to hear your voice very often, so it's nice to hear your voice. Is there anyone else who would like to share before I go into the six steps? All right, Joanne, the mic is yours.
I just have a question. I know you discussed it at one point, but where do those flames come from that those some people have?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not on fire. I want to be on fire.
Yeah, I think we have decided that those are the people that Pal Talk is kind of giving a badge to because they have upgraded to the new version of Pal Talk. Pal Talk's happy about that, and so they get a badge. And like when I'm at home, I'm at Ken's house now, and he's bad. He's still on the old version. So when I'm at his house, I do not get a flame. But when I go home, I'm good. I have upgraded, so I get a flame. So, but no, I think that's what that is. And I'm sure it's probably one of their subtle ways of trying to encourage everyone to upgrade. Mike hasn't worked since it's on your Mac. Really, Kathy? Oh, that's interesting. It works perfect on my Mac. So that's kind of interesting. Oh, and maybe we're wrong, because Lori says she has a Flame and she hasn't upgraded. So maybe our theory is wrong. But I do have a Flame when I'm at home, and I don't have a Flame here, so I don't know.
Must be my house.
Must be your house, yeah. all right, so anyone else? We do still have 6 minutes of sharing time if there's someone else who wants to share. All right, then, let me go into the 6 steps. I will say, first of all, I am not certified to teach the 6 steps. And if I heard correctly, Diedrich likes people to be certified. So I won't be doing any counseling using the 6 steps. But even though I'm not certified, I was at a week-long retreat, Awakening Together hosted Diedrich for a week-long Choose Again retreat, and I was there. So I saw many, many people go through the process. I was also in Costa Rica with Diedrich, where he taught the process. So I've been around it quite a bit. And I have a nice little book right in front of me that Diedrich wrote and gave to me. So I'm going to go ahead and share the 6-step process with you. One thing I want to say before I get started is this makes our 4th inquiry process that I've taught you, and at this point it's the only 4 inquiry processes I know, so I won't be teaching you any others unless, you know, Spirit brings something to my attention. But the reason I've taught you 4 inquiry processes is so that you can use whatever will work for you. You're not stuck with one process that just doesn't seem to be getting you anywhere. You have 4 options. But also, one of the things that you may have noticed, and if not, I'll probably point it out while I'm sharing today, these 4 processes can actually kind of mix and match. You know, you may find yourself starting with one and then naturally shifting to the other. And so there aren't any rules about inquiry other than the fact that you are genuinely looking to see what is the cause of your upset. They all have that in common. Whether we're talking about, maybe not self-inquiry. If we're talking about root cause inquiry, Byron Katie's The Work, or Choose Again, they all start with an upset. You know, so if you're just genuinely looking to see what your upset is, they also all 3 have in common that it's about you. The step 2 that Diedrich has, it's all about me. They all have that. You know, that's true with root cause inquiry. That's true with The Work as well. So you're genuine about wanting to find out the cause of your upset. You realize that it has nothing to do with anything outside of you. It has everything to do with your mind. And then you are going to genuinely find what that is and begin the process of letting that go or allowing that to be healed. You can use any of these processes and you can mix and match them. So today what I'm going to do is just go over the 4th process that I've taught, and then at the end I'll kind of quickly review all 4 processes. This is actually called 6 Steps to Freedom. Let me just check this real quick. Somebody. Oh, that's not important. I thought maybe somebody died, so I was going to check. But nobody died. Somebody drove through my mother's town. I'll figure that more out about that later. but anyway, my mom doesn't text me very often. So when she does, I like to peek and make sure. Also, her husband is not, you know, super healthy, so you never know. All right, so the 6 steps to freedom. Number 1. I am upset. And I would say this is also where root cause inquiry starts, and this is also where The Work starts. So step 1, no matter which form of inquiry you're using, if you're using those 3, you're going to start in the same place. But one thing that the 6 steps to freedom points out, the Choose Again process, which is really important, and I think it's also true for Byron Katie and root cause inquiry, is that you have to begin by admitting that you're upset. And there is something in the ego mind that, unless it's just so big that, you know, we can't deny it, if it's a little bitty thing, there's something in the mind that would like very much to deny that I'm upset. And in fact, I think that's true for all humans, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody did a study if we found out that's even more true of spiritual humans. Once you get on this path of spirituality, you know, you get this ideal of what a spiritual person is. It's this person who's always at peace, always happy, et cetera, et cetera. And then you want to hold on to that image because you think if you're not that perfect spiritual person, of course you're bad, right? That's the flip side. So you want to hold on to this image of being this perfect spiritual person. And so when an upset comes up, you quickly deny it. NTI calls that the stabs to your peace. I think it's in NTI Philippians. The stabs to your peace or the intrusions to your peace. And it also tells you that, you know, the first thing that we want to do is deny it. So the little upsets are the things we have to be the most careful about. And what Diedrich recommends, and so would I with Root Cause Inquiry, is that even the small upsets you bring into inquiry. And in fact, I think there's a huge advantage to bringing the small upsets to inquiry. What my experience was when I went through the purification process when I was living with Laurent, my experience was that I would have all these little upsets. You know, I was doing pretty good. I wasn't like hating him and wanting to kill him today. You know, compared to how strong the hate could get, it felt relatively peaceful, right? But it wasn't perfect peace, and there were all these little bitty upsets, and what I was doing was not paying attention to them. And it's almost like they started to stack up. And at some point, they created, the molehill turned into a mountain, and then there was this huge, 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 huge thing that was really difficult to be with. And I started to realize, wait a minute, what if I dealt with the little things? You know, maybe if I deal with the little things, those big things, you know, won't occur, right? So maybe they're adding up to the big things. If I deal with the little things, then the big things don't occur. So I started to really pay attention to the little upsets, and that's what I would recommend with you too. Start paying attention whenever those little upsets are coming and put them through the process. So that is the first recommendation or the first step. I am upset. Acknowledge that you are upset or that you are in conflict. Step one, pretty easy if you do it, if you choose to do it. It's pretty easy. Number two, me. This is all about me. So number one is acknowledging you're upset. Number two is admitting this is all about me. It doesn't matter what it is, what it is, what it is. It doesn't matter if you just lost everything you own in one of the hurricanes, the one we just experienced or the one we're about to experience. It doesn't matter if your husband, who you were madly in love with and thought he was madly in love with you, suddenly left with his secretary. It doesn't matter if you get cancer. It doesn't matter if your child gets cancer. I mean, it just doesn't matter. If you're upset, it's because of a belief in your mind. And Diedrich says that this is probably, this is very difficult for most people on the planet, and I totally agree with him. If we are willing to accept that it's about me, in most cases, we're willing to accept that in some situations, but not all situations. You know, this was about me, this was about the, this is about you, right? So we need to understand there's no exception to that. It's always about me. If I'm upset, it's about me. It doesn't mean that the other person isn't also in their ego. Because, you know, chances are, if they're an average person on the planet, they are, right? So we're not saying that they're not in their ego. We're just saying that the reason you're upset is because you're in yours. If you were in your right mind, you'd be able to deal with them from a peaceful, clear mind, right? So step one, admitting that I'm upset, acknowledging that. Step two, realizing this is always about me. Step three should sound very familiar because we just went through a whole book about step three, the untethered soul. Step three is, well, the title of the step is focus on the feeling. But the very first question within the step, which I found in watching people go through the process with Diedrich, the first question is very important. How do I feel? I was actually surprised, you know, because we experience life a little differently. And I think I've always been pretty good at being able to tell you how I feel. I was pretty surprised that a large number of people couldn't. A large number of people could not tell, they could tell you they were upset, but they couldn't tell you exactly how they felt. So what Diedrich would do, and this, I think this is a sign of just how good we've gotten at denying our feelings, right? I can't even tell you what I'm feeling right now, except that I hate you. Other than that, I can't tell you. So what Diedrich did, and I think I saw these same pieces of paper on the video, is he handed out pieces of paper with lists of feelings. And when people could not identify how they felt, he had them read the list and say, oh, disgusted, I feel disgusted, you know, and pick something off the list. And I think people were allowed to pick up to three. He didn't want them, you know, having a long laundry list, so they had to narrow it down. You can find these lists on the internet. There's several lists on the internet. If you just search for, you know, lists of feelings, you will find them. If I remember correctly, on ReginaDawnAkers.com, under classics, the second dozen classics, where I teach root cause inquiry in an audio, I think I might have, there's a link there to a handout, and in that handout, I think there's a link to a list, if I remember correctly. So, a list of feelings. So remember, if you don't know how you're feeling, pause here at step three and first find out what you're feeling. If you have to go look at a list and read through the list, do that. Because this is going to help you bring it out of denial. What's causing you to not know how you're feeling is denial, right? So you want to help pull that up out of denial. Then after you take the time to identify with the feeling, or if you've listed three, Diedrich would ask you, after you've picked three, then pick the one that's strongest. So you're still going to narrow it down to one. So after taking the time to identify with the feelings, and then what you want to do, or not identify, identify the feelings, not identify with. After you've taken the time to identify the feelings, then what you want to do is you want to move into experiencing it. And I don't know what would be helpful for you. What would be helpful for me would probably just be to close my eyes, you know, and just allow myself to feel that, whether that's disgust or anger or anxiousness or jealousy or envy or greed or fear or whatever. Just close your eyes and allow yourself to feel it. And in fact, you're asked to allow yourself to feel it completely. So you don't want to hold back on that feeling at all. And one of the reasons for that with the choose again process is because you're actually going to use the feeling to get to step four and step five. When you get in touch with the feeling, you're getting in touch with what I'm going to call your emotional memory rather than your intellectual memory. And your emotional memory is going to be actually more honest. It's not as good at denial. It's more honest than your mental memory. So one thing that you're doing when you're getting in touch with the feelings is you're getting in touch well enough that you're going to be able to go into your emotional memory with step four and step five and look to learn more about your current upset. Let's see. Here's some things that Diedrich has written in his little book that I have here. I have to be in the feeling in order to make a genuine change in my life. I have to feel it to heal it. And I think I just highlighted that because I like the fact that it rhymed. It's easier to remember. I have to feel it to heal it. And then he says, underneath it, each feeling is a belief about myself that I constructed at an early age. It is important to remember that these are just beliefs. They are not truth. So, oh, and it looks like we have Sufi has put in the room that under Byron Katie's website, thework.com, you can find tools to do the work, and there's an emotions list there. So if you need an emotions list to help you describe your feeling to yourself, thework.com under tools to do the work. Thank you very much for sharing that. Okay, so again, step number one is acknowledging that I'm upset. Step number two is accepting that this really is all about me. Step number three, you identify the feeling, and then you focus on the feeling. And again, like I said, this is going to allow you to go into your emotional memory. So you really want to take some time to get in tune with that feeling and feel it completely. Then you can go to step four. And step four is this familiar? And as Diedrich said, the answer is always going to be yes. And it is. If you're a grown-up, if you're two, maybe it's the first time. But if you're a grown-up, trust me, it's not the first time. So the answer is always going to be yes. He said it's very important to recognize that your reaction to this current situation, whatever it is actually a recurring emotional pattern. Some people would call it conditioning. It's a recurring emotional pattern. So it isn't about, you know, Ken. You know, he's the one I always seem to use as my example. It isn't about Ken and whatever Ken said, right? I may be, you know, just as angry as I can be at Ken, but I have felt anger before. And I have felt anger many times before in my life. This anger, remember, is always about me. This is a recurring emotional pattern that I have. I know it because this is not the first time I've been angry. This is conditioning. And what I really want to do is look within me and find out what is causing this anger habit. That's what Peace Pilgrim would call it, an anger habit. And by the way, Cheryl, I'm often listening to you on the radio when you're sharing from Peace Pilgrim, and I absolutely love it. It's been many years, as you know, I love that book. It's been many years since I have read it myself. So to listen as you're going through it again is just a real treat for me. So thank you very much for sharing from that book here in the sanctuary. So yeah, as Peace Pilgrim would say, it's an anger habit. So when you're asking, is this familiar, what you're doing is you're really looking and you're accepting, this isn't just about this situation. This is a feeling that I've had many times. This is some kind of an internal pattern. It has nothing to do with the circumstance. Again, you're kind of re-emphasizing, this is all about me. And now you want to start going into the, again, the emotional memory to see what the emotional memory will bring up as the earliest time that you remember feeling this feeling. Right? That's going to take us into step five. So step five is establish what my judgment of myself was at that moment. Or more commonly, you'll hear Diedrich say, what did that say about you? So what you're going to do is you're in step four. You've acknowledged that this is familiar. You now go into the feeling in step five, and you are looking for the emotional memory that's going to arise from the first time that you felt this feeling. So one example that is coming to my mind, of course, if I'm feeling really unworthy, just not as good as everyone else. You know, just not as good as everyone else. If I close my eyes and I go back and I remember the first time I had that exact feeling, it's kind of a funny story now, but still, it was very important then. If I go back and remember the first time I really just felt not as good as everyone else in the room, it was in kindergarten. And in kindergarten, every day we got a snack followed by a nap. And often the snack was graham crackers and milk. And I remember it seemed like all the other kids could break their graham crackers on the little perforated lines. And no matter how hard I tried, mine would just break right in the middle. I could not break my graham crackers on the lines.
Perfectly.
This is the first time that I recall that distinct feeling of unworthiness. So if I was with Diedrich and he asked me, when is the first time that you ever felt this pattern of unworthiness? Well, let me finish and I'll come back to Kathy's question. If Diedrich was to ask me, when was the first time that you remember feeling this, that's the story I would tell him. And he would say to me, and this is step five, he would say to me, well, what did that say about you that you couldn't break your graham crackers on the perforated lines? And my answer would be, it said that I'm unworthy. Now, at this point, my mind now might automatically switch, to be honest, to the work. Is that true? Am I absolutely, is that true? The fact that I can't break my graham crackers on the line, does that make me unworthy? So that's why I said you can kind of mix and match these. And if it happens for you naturally to jump processes like that, go right ahead. But what Diedrich wants us to understand at step five is that this was just our interpretation. It was my decision in my mind that because I could not break my graham cracker on the lines, I was unworthy. Right? That was my decision in my mind. And that's what number five is. Establish what judgment of myself was made at that moment. And then that takes us into step six. And step six, yeah, I'll get back to it. Step six is embracing the truth about myself. Step six is the forgiveness process. And this is where I might write in my journal, if I'm doing this by myself, I might say, I forgive myself for believing I was unworthy because I could not break my graham crackers on the lines. And then I might write, let's see, thank God that is not true, right, that I'm unworthy. Thank God that is not true. And then I forgive myself for forgetting that I am perfect, might be what I would write. And then my next line would be, thank God that is true, that I am perfect, right? And this is the forgiveness process, these types of statements. And really what we're doing here is we're replacing the incorrect belief with the truth. We're replacing the incorrect belief with the truth. And what Diedrich says is if you work on these upsets, again, the minor upsets, and if you go through that process over and over and over again, what we could say is you're really unconditioning the conditioning you taught yourself. It's undoing the conditioning you taught yourself by teaching yourself the truth now. That's really what you're doing. So it's something that's not, you know, you could have a miracle where you do it once and boom, that's gone. But if not, you keep doing it. That's the point. You just keep doing it. And maybe a little at a time, you're whittling away from that belief that you taught yourself, right? And now you're reteaching yourself the truth. So that, in a nutshell, is the process. Now, Kathy's question is, why is it important to remember the earliest time you felt that feeling? You guys may not remember this, but one of the first things that you read in NTI, in the first few weeks, you read NTI Luke chapters 16 and 17. And NTI Luke chapter 16 specifically talks about how we make up meaning, and then we reapply it, and then we reapply it, and then we reapply it, and this is how a belief is built. Well, what Diedrich wants to do is he wants to take you back to where you began that process of making up that meaning, right? Because by the time you were, you know, like if the first time you really felt unworthy was at age 5, by the time you were 12, it probably already seemed like a fact. When you go back to 12, you know, if it's not all the way back, you might not see it so much as, oh, I just made that up, right? But if you go back to the earliest memory, you're going to see, I just made that up. You know, I made that up. I believed that. And then later in life, I believed it again. And then later in life, I believed it again. And pretty soon it felt like a fact. So you're just going back to your earliest time. Now, by the way, I might have felt unworthy before age 5. That's just the earliest that I can remember. And again, this is the advantage or one of the advantages of step 3. Step 3, which is focus on the feeling. When you're really focusing on that feeling and you're really feeling it, that moves you into your emotional memory, which is a different memory than your mental memory. Your mental memory might block out something that your emotional memory will bring up. So when you go into the feeling and you go into, it amazed me when I was here for the Choose Again week, and he would, you know, lead people through this process, and they're in step 3, and then he would ask them, when's the early, you know, is this feeling familiar? Yes. And he'd say, okay, look, you know, look within. When's the earliest time that you remember feeling this? People came up with answers like that. They didn't have to think because the emotional memory took them right there. Oh, I remember when I was in 3rd grade. I was in the woods with Billy Smith, and, you know, we killed a squirrel. You know, I mean, you know, just boom, they were right back there. So again, that's the importance of taking your time with step 3 to really identify the feeling, really get in touch with the feeling. The feeling is going to take you back through emotional memory to the situation that you need to look at. And almost always, it's a childhood experience. I did go through, in a way, this process. I didn't know about the Choose Again process But it's just something that Holy Spirit naturally did with me when I went through the rejection with Laurent. One of the questions that the Holy Spirit asked me when I was going through the rejection experience was, have you felt this before? And when asked, have I felt this before? Yes. And immediately, because I was in the feeling, immediately a memory came up. And that was a memory from probably, you know, age 20. Which was, you know, 25 years before the day that I was sitting there probably, maybe 26 years, 28 years, who knows. So it was back quite a bit. But it was not all the way back to childhood. But still, that's where my emotional memory took me, and that's where Holy Spirit and I worked, was right there. So what you don't want to do is put these false pressures on yourself, like, ooh, I was 13 then, that's probably not back far enough, I need to think harder. Just let your emotional memory take you there. Right? Trust that. So that is the six-step process of choose again. Let me just pause for a moment and see if anyone else has any questions they want to ask about this process. Oh, you missed five and six. I can go over. In fact, you know what I'll do? I'll go over the whole process again. So step one is, I am upset, acknowledging that. Step two is, this is about me. Step three is, how do I feel? And then focus on the feeling. And again, this is where you're going to activate your emotional memory. Step four is, you ask yourself, is this feeling familiar? And again, if you're a grown-up, the answer is yes. You're going to, it is. But still see that for yourself genuinely. So yes, I felt this before. Then you allow that emotional memory to take you back to the first time that you felt it. This is really still step four. Go back to the earliest time you can remember feeling this familiar feeling. And remember that, you know, Dietrich would say really remember that situation to whatever degree you can. Remember what someone was saying, or what you were saying, or what you were doing, who else was there. You know, go ahead and pull that experience back up into your mind, wherever your emotional memory takes you. And then number five, what did that circumstance say about you? What did you decide that circumstance said about you? And if you really take yourself back to that situation, you're even going to remember thinking. You know, you're going to remember thinking, I'm not lovable, or I'm stupid, or I'm clumsy, or I'm not as good as everybody else. You're going to remember it because your emotional memory has stored that. That's why it keeps replaying over and over and over again. It's there. In fact, in a way, even though you weren't doing the six steps, you demonstrated this for a couple weeks ago when you were talking about how you recently felt bullied. And you actually naturally went all the way back into your emotional memory, probably because you were allowing yourself to feel that. You went all the way back, and you remember being bullied by your brothers, right?
I tracked every bullying.
You tracked all the bullying, huh?
Well, that's how mine works, is I remember every one of them.
Yes.
And relive every one of them.
And then
part of the training that we've gone through within me is to not hit the first one and panic. Hmm. Because as you're saying here with Dietrich, if you stop at that very first one in the chain, you don't ever really get back to the source.
Right, where you made the decision. And when we took you, when you went all the way back to your brother's bullying, what did you decide that meant about you?
Nothing.
Well, no, and originally that's something.
Oh, originally
decided.
That I was a wuss.
Yeah, you're a wuss, weak, right? And who made the decision that you were a wuss?
I did.
See, that's the point. That's the point. That's what we have to see. I'm the one that decided this situation meant this about me.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why we want to go back into that emotional memory and look. Step five is establish what my judgment of myself was at that moment, or more simply, what did I think it said about me? All right, what did that say about me? So again, in my case with the graham crackers, it literally said to me, everyone else is better than me. Everyone else, and I don't even know for sure if everyone else could break their graham crackers on the lines, but that's the way I perceived it. Yeah. Right? Everyone else is better than me. So we want to go back at step five, and we want to see what judgments I made in this earliest memory. And then step six again. Step six is the forgiveness process, and Diedrich has a pretty routinized forgiveness process. I might do something different now. Like I said, you can mix and match the processes, so I'll come back and share what I might do if I was using this. But first, let me share what Diedrich does. So step six is called embrace the truth about me, but it's really the forgiveness process. So step six, if I'm Ken, and I decided that I was a wuss, then I might say to myself, by the way, another way to do this is to look in the mirror. You can write it in a journal, but you can also look at your eyes in the mirror and say this to yourself. Forgive me for believing that I am a wuss. Thank God that's not true. Forgive me for forgetting, and then you fill in that blank with some kind of a true statement. So what would you say if you were forgiving yourself for being a wuss? Forgive me for forgetting that I am.
I am.
That I am. Yeah. Or we could say, I am unaffected, or I am beyond, you know, or whatever comes to your mind, right? Forgive me for forgetting that I am. Thank God that is true, right? So first it's forgive me for believing, dot, dot, dot. And thank God that is not true, whatever you believed. And then forgive me for forgetting and some statement of truth about you, followed by thank God that is true. And again, you can do that writing in a journal. You can do that looking at yourself in a mirror. Also, if you're doing it with a partner, let's say that Rebecca was helping Ken look at this, then what could happen is Ken could look in Rebecca's eyes and say, forgive me for believing I'm a wuss. And Rebecca would look in Ken's eyes and say, thank God that's not true. And then Ken would look back in Rebecca's eyes and he would say, forgive me for forgetting I am. And Rebecca would look in Ken's eyes and say, thank God that is true, right? So you can do it like in a partnership. You can do it in journaling. You can do it looking in the mirror. Three different ways to do those two steps, or that last step. So, and in a moment I'll teach you what I would do at step six now, you know. But before I go on, does anybody have any questions? Yes, Dave.
Where's the Holy Spirit in this process? It seems like it's all me doing it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Dave says, where is the Holy Spirit in this process? And I would say the answer is the Holy Spirit's what gave us the process. So this is as if a teacher gives you something, and when you practice it, you're following the teacher's instructions. So that's the answer to the question. Because again, you made the decision that you're a wuss, if you made that decision.
Right.
So you have to decide that you were wrong. If you cling to the belief, do you remember in A Course in Miracles? Well, you might not, but in A Course in Miracles is a place where Helen asked Jesus to please take away my fear. Do you remember what Jesus said to her? He said, I can't. And the reason that he couldn't is because you are equal to me, and if you're holding on to it, I can't take it from you, or I would be usurping your authority. So we have to understand that we do have a part in healing. We have to let go of whatever we're clinging to, right? And so this is a process of letting go, is really what it is. It's a process to help you see that you made the decision, and then to help you let go by writing these affirmations. Okay? So, let's see, we have another question. Oh, Doreen, the mic is yours. Thank you, Ken, for being my co-pilot.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. Regina, just so you know, I'm probably going to be late for the gentle healing class for the next 2 weeks. I have a class that ends at 8:30, but I usually join in, and then I'm driving for about 30 minutes before I can actually talk. So,
okay.
I wanted to share a little bit about the Choose Again process. In listening to the audio, because I listened to at least the first one some time ago, and I remember speaking about or listening about the going back to the first memory. And I remember going through the process of reflecting on some memories that I've had. Now, one of the things I wasn't sure about or still contemplating about, I guess, and maybe you can share some insight on this. Like, there's about 5 memories, childhood memories, that are really, really strong, and they feel like they have a really strong imprint. They all relate to my father, and so I have, and I know that they have impacted who I am and how I operate today. And then I have the things that I tend to have challenges with or to have upsets around today, even though I don't always, you know, when you were talking about sometimes we don't identify the feeling. Sometimes I have challenges identifying these things or identifying what the upset is. So what I did was, and it feels like I did it a little backwards, but what I did is I was reflecting on the memories, one in particular, and what I felt from that particular memory. And what came out of it for me, which I had not identified before, was that particular memory gave me the belief that I was not supported. And that is something that I deal with today, especially in a job situation. I feel like I'm not supported. And so if I were to reflect on this current situation of not being supported, I would have not thought of this memory. And so it's kind of, I've discovered it like in a backwards kind of a way. So it was really interesting because I had not, this is the first time that I realized, like, oh my God, this is where this came from. Mm-hmm. This very strong imprinted memory where I really was not supported, and it's something that I'm still carrying. So anyway, just if you, there's some insights you can share from what you read from Dietrich and or the training or the exposure that you had to him, if, you know, of seemingly going about it in a backwards way, according to the process. So anyway, letting go.
Yeah, that to me, that's perfectly fine. To me, the processes are laid out when we need a guide. But if our inner guide is guiding us, then we don't need a guide. And if your inner guide is guiding you to go about it that way, but you still get to the same point, you're perfect. I mean, you know, so I don't think that anybody needs to feel like, oh, these are the rules and I got to do it this way or I'm doing it wrong. I mean, that would just be ego. You know, inner intuition gave me root cause inquiry. It gave Byron Katie the work. It gave Diedrich the choose again process, and it gave Ramana Maharshi self-inquiry, which I'll talk about in a moment. You know, these are just ways of going about looking. And then as teachers, we teach the method that we were given, right? But something completely new or different can be born in you, just like something was born in us. Again, the point is that you're practicing the inquiry. You realize, like I said, these first couple of steps in Diedrich's process are true in all of the processes, right? Step one, we have to acknowledge that we're upset. And step two, we have to realize this is about me, right? And I would say even step three, it's about looking at the feeling, you know, or looking at what you believe about yourself or whatever. But, you know, so there are similarities in the processes, but you may be guided in your own way of going through a process. Root cause inquiry was born in me. I didn't learn it from anyone. You know, the work was born in Byron Katie, and Choose Again was born in Diedrich. So if something's born in you that's being effective, even if it sounds like it's, quote, backwards, just go with it. Yeah. So what I had mentioned was that now, if I was using the choose again process to look at something, when I got to step six, I don't think for me, this is a for me thing, I don't think I would do this forgive me for believing affirmation piece. I think I would now shift into self-inquiry, and I would start noticing the difference between the mind that believes I'm a wuss and that which sees this, that which is changeless. And then I would start asking, which one am I? So I would probably really start, you know, I'd close my eyes and I would go into self-inquiry, you know. So, okay, I see. You don't mind me using your example, do you? Okay.
Go for it.
I see that I decided I was a wuss. I see that that affected me here and here and here and here, right? Because Ken said he remembered all these. I see, and I see it's affecting me now, all right? But where is this idea that I'm a wuss? You know, and when I ask that question, I'm going to see immediately that's in thought. That's a thought. And then I would ask, what sees this thought? And I would shift my attention to awareness. I might do some other inquiry questions like, which is constant, the thought or this? This meaning the awareness, the awareness. Was I this when I was 5? Was I this when I was 10? Was I this when I was 20? Am I this when I feel powerful? Am I this when I feel happy? Am I this? And I would really start paying attention to the fact that I'm this changelessness that's always here, that I'm this awareness. I'm not this idea of a wuss. And it really would separate for me the difference between a concept that I've believed and my truth. Because remember, 6 is called embrace the truth about me. So I would go about embracing the truth in what feels to me like a more experiential way rather than an affirmation type of way. To me, that feels like that would have a deeper effect. But it's still embracing the truth. It's still step 6, right? It's just kind of going about it in a different way. And like I said, when I got to step 5, which is, you know, establishing the judgment I made about myself, what did this say about me? I'm a wuss. At that point, I might shift into Byron Katie. Is this true? I'm a wuss. Am I absolutely certain that this is true? How do I feel when I think I'm a wuss? How would I feel if I didn't have this thought? Can I turn this around? You know, I might slip into her process after step 5, right? Also, if you have a challenge with, for some reason, let's say your emotional memory isn't working. And that could be caused by fear or something. So your emotional memory is not working. You know, Regina told you that if you felt the feeling, it would take you back, and it's not taking you back. Does that mean you're a loser? No, it means you should switch processes. So what you can do at that point is you can say, okay, this choose again process isn't working for me. I'm going to try root cause inquiry. Because root cause inquiry has nothing to do with going back to an earlier time. Root cause inquiry is all about this situation right now. Why am I upset by what Ken said to me? You know, how did that make me feel? Why did I feel that way? Well, you know, Ken lied. Okay, but if I was enlightened, would it upset me that Ken lied? No. Okay, so why does it upset me that Ken lied? And see, you don't have to go into the past. You're looking at the situation that's right here in your face right now. So if you find that the choose again process isn't working, shift to root cause inquiry, or shift to Byron Katie, or shift to self inquiry. What sees this upset? What am I? Am I the upset? Or am I this changeless presence that was here before the upset? It really doesn't matter which inquiry process you use, as long as you're using it genuinely. Right? So I've given you a variety of tools. You can use any of them. You can use all of them. You can mix and match them. Or maybe something will be born in you and you'll use that. It doesn't matter. Okay? Are there any other questions? All right, then, I am shifting gears. I am going to go to In the World But Not of It by Gina Lake. And some of you might want to take notes today. You know, if you hear something, because Gina's going to cover, last week was kind of light. I told you that was the introduction. Okay, light is over. For now on in this book, Gina's pow, 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 pow. And there are going to be so many pows that, you know, in order to remember the ones that really stand out to you, remember what I said I do since my memory's not perfect? I write it down, right? So you may, if you hear something that really sounds like, ooh, you know, I want to focus on that later. I want to remember that. Just write it down. So it's up to you. Notes are not required. But if you hear something that you want to contemplate a little more, look at a little more deeply, please write it down. So I'm starting on page 11 of In the World But Not Of It, and today I will be going up to page 18. So I'm going to start with the second to last paragraph on page 11. Gina/Jesus says, "To experience yourself as the true self, you have to first let go of experiencing yourself as the false self. This is a matter of letting go or of not giving your attention to the thoughts in the thought stream that are responsible for creating the false self." And that's not new. It's one of the first things we learned in gentle healing, that your attention is what feeds the thoughts and feeds the idea of the false self, right? So the way you let go of the false self is by removing your attention from those thoughts. The first thing we learned. Now what Gina is going to do, or Jesus is going to do, is go through a list of basic types of thoughts that uphold the false self, which means when you see this type of thinking in you, this is a time to shift your attention, right? Because these thoughts uphold the false self. So number one is a biggie. Number one, thoughts pertaining to I, including thoughts about other people in relation to you. Although such thoughts seem integral to life, they actually aren't needed to function. They're only integral to the life of the false self. Again, that's thoughts pertaining to I, including thoughts about other people in relation to you. If you pay any attention to your mind at all, you're going to find that the majority of these I thoughts she's talking about are mind wandering. It's the stories that are running in your mind when you're not so focused on something. Like if you're focused on your work, really focused on your work, these I thoughts aren't running. But when you're doing something like driving that, you know, doesn't take our full focus, although maybe it should, but it doesn't take our full focus, right? You're driving around, you're thinking about what she said and what you said and how you should have said this instead. Next time you see her, you're going to do this, right? That's all of that I thought is doing nothing but upholding the ego, and it has no other purpose. So she's asking us to pay attention to those and be willing to shift your attention. You're driving along, you're running through a conversation in your head, either one that happened or one that you're imagining is going to happen, and you notice it. Pause, realize you do not want to uphold the false self through this type of mind wandering, and shift to your course lesson, right? Contemplate your course lesson instead. You can do that. If you can think about hating somebody and drive, you can contemplate your course lesson and drive. Would you agree? Yeah.
Depends on how deep you contemplate.
Yeah. Well, you can think about it. You know, you can, you know, like I found today's lesson very easy to think about, you know. So if I think I am ugly, have I ever felt beautiful? Yeah, I felt beautiful. I remember feeling beautiful at this time. You know, and that, you know, you can be having those kinds of thoughts while driving your car, but they're thoughts that are more healing rather than these types of thoughts. So number two, remember, these are thoughts that uphold the false self. Thoughts that attempt to make you better or less than someone else, or thoughts that make you right and others wrong. There's a whole category of thinking, right? And probably when you're watching that mind wandering, that I thinking we just talked about in number one, a significant number of those also fall into number two, right? So number two is any thought that attempts to make you better than someone else. I'm the better teacher, I'm clear. You know, people would prefer to listen to me than to listen to him, right? Or less than someone else. Oh, he's so much more enlightened than me. I bet people just wish I'd shut up so they could hear more from him, right? or ones that make you right and others wrong. Now, I'm right about my method of teaching what the absolute is. His method of teaching is missing this, and right? All that kind of thinking is doing nothing but holding up the false self. Number three, thoughts that assume or pretend to know something with absolute certainty. These include your opinions, beliefs, and many of the thoughts about other people. These also strengthen the false self. So whatever you think you know about Donald Trump or, you know, Barack Obama or, you know, anybody else, your daughter, your son, your husband, anything that you think you know and you feel like you know it with absolute certainty, that feeling, in fact, if you haven't yet, you'll get to know that feeling. It feels like ego, right? That feeling of I know feels like ego because that's what it is. Number four, all fears and worries. Doesn't matter what it's about. All fear and all worry upholds the false self. Fear and worry, this is what Gina/Jesus says, these always come from the ego and never from the divine self. Do you hear the words always and never in that statement? Fears and worries always come from the ego and never from the divine self. So if you're allowing yourself to focus on fears and worries in the mind, you are upholding the false self. This is an opportunity to shift your attention away from whatever's going on in your mind, you know, to your course lesson, or move into rest, accept, and trust, or move into inquiry. Do something helpful with it rather than just continuing to fear and worry. Number five, doubts, self-doubts, confusion, and indecision. It's quite a list. Doubts, self-doubts, confusion, and indecision. These all uphold the false self. And here's what Gina and Jesus have to say about that. Knowing, or clarity, naturally arises when knowing is needed, and not before then. So when you feel confused, or you don't know something but you want to, that's the ego. And one thing I learned a long time ago is that I will know when I'm supposed to know. And until then, just know that I will know when I'm supposed to know. You know, and I think I've told you guys before, in my family, lots of times the family is looking to me to make, they want to do something, they want to go somewhere, but for some reason it's my job to figure out what we're going to do. And I just don't always know. And sometimes they'll say, well, let's just get in the car and start driving. And I'm sure it will come. And it does. We'll get in the car. And Ron will say, where shall I go? I said, we'll drive down Highway 50. No matter where we go, we got to go down 50. You know? So we'll get in the car and we'll start driving down Highway 50. And like, ah, let's go to Cactus Flower. Let's go there. And it'll arise. But I don't worry about it until it arises. I know that when I'm supposed to know, it will come. And until then, you've got to be happy with not knowing. Right? So doubts, self-doubts, confusion, and indecision. In other words, wanting to know when it's not time to know. That is upholding the ego. Number six, thoughts about the past. Now here's something that's fairly interesting. Earlier we saw with fears and worries the words always and never. Fears and worries always come from the ego and never from the divine self. Those words are not used here. Here it says, thoughts about the past, these rarely serve the moment. They merely take you out of presence, right? They are the ego's agenda of storytelling. It's really keeping you focused on those I thoughts that we saw in number one. But the interesting thing here is rarely. It doesn't say never. And we just looked at the choose again process where going back into the past might be helpful. Going back and seeing, oh yeah, I decided I was unworthy. That's what I thought not being able to break a graham cracker meant, right? So sometimes, it's not like the past is taboo. Sometimes looking at the past is going to give you the clarity that you need now. It's just that all of that I type of thinking, where we're running over the past over and over and over in our mind, you know, the same kind of thinking we saw in number one, that's what upholds the ego. Number seven, thoughts and fantasies about the future, including compulsive planning. I used to be a compulsive planner, so I know exactly what that means. I still plan. In fact, my life now is run by my calendar. You know, if Ken says, "Hey, Regina, can you add these pages to the website?" Well, I know that's probably going to take me about 5 hours. I'll go block out 5 hours in my calendar. You know, maybe 2 hours on one day, 3 hours the next, and I can tell Ken I'll have that done by Friday. And if I don't have the 5 hours this week, I can say, "Ken, there's not 5 hours this week. Next week I can do it." But once I put in my calendar, I stop. When I get there, then I'll put my head into that project. So that's not compulsive planning. To me, that's just being reasonable. But in order to do that, I need 5 hours. Let's make sure I save 5 hours for it, right? Compulsive planning is between now and next week when it's on my calendar, thinking about it all of the time. I can't quit thinking. I'm thinking about what other people are going to think about what I'm imagining in my mind. I mean, it just runs and runs and runs and runs, right? So it's okay to do things like buy plane tickets for trips. It's okay to book your hotel. It's okay to even say, "Hey, on day one, we're going to do this. On day two, we're going to do this," right? Because sometimes that's what you do with a trip. I had to do that with our Israel trip that I planned. But I'm not going into compulsive planning, which is imagining what you guys are going to think about the agenda. And when we get there, how you're going to respond when we get to this certain site. And if I happen to not be as clear as you'd like me to be, how you're going to hate me, that's compulsive planning, making up the story about next year's trip to Israel, right? So know the difference between, in fact, notice she says thoughts and fantasies about the future, right? Know the difference between the reasonable planning that just happens in an effective human life these days and all of this planning that upholds the ego. Number eight, black and white thinking and ideas of good and bad and right and wrong. Life is not as simple as this type of thinking presumes, although the ego would like it to be. The ego likes to name, categorize, put in a box, and wrap things up with a tidy bow. This is how it pretends to know things. The ego doesn't think in shades of gray. And in fact, spirit simply, it's not even gray. Spirit thinks in, this stuff's not true. Black and white thinking is not true. Good and bad is not true. Right and wrong is not true. Right? Shades of gray would just be moving in the right direction. But like this weekend here in Pueblo West, there were three teenage boys that I saw on a video. Three teenage boys that were going around and stealing from cars. They were checking to see if the car was locked. If it was, they just went on. They weren't breaking into the cars. But if the car was unlocked, they would go inside and, you know, go through the glove compartments and everything and see if they could find anything they wanted. And I'm in a group called I Live in Pueblo West, and it's interesting reading the comments. Because to some people, these boys are bad. To some people, the parents are bad. Because this was 2 in the morning. You know, how come your teenage kids are out at 2 in the morning, right? You know, so there's just this black and white thinking. And this type of black and white, I'm certain those boys are bad. I'm certain those parents are bad. You know, this is the type of thinking that just upholds ego. It's the same thing with I'm certain those people are good. Those people that gave that money are very, very good. That's the right thing to do. Right? You remember that spirit more just watches, that's what's happening. That's what is. And doesn't jump on either side of the good or bad, right or wrong fence. Right? Now, what is it that Rumi says? Something about out there. I don't remember the exact poem. Out there, there is a field that is beyond the ideas of right and wrong, or maybe he says good and bad. And then he says, I will meet you there, right? So that's the field that we want to aim for. And when we have this black and white thinking, we're just upholding the ego. Number nine, thoughts related to lack or needing something, the sense that something is missing, wanting things to be different, feeling bored, complaining. They're actually, it sounds like a long list, but they're all related, or they wouldn't be listed on this same line. A sense of lack and the fear and desire stirred up by that drive the ego to do what it does. But lack is an imagined concept, a belief that something is missing when nothing is. Everything simply is as it is, and the only way it can be for the time being. You know, an example that's coming in my mind is yesterday Ron and I went out to play. And one of the places that we went was the sand dunes. And where we were at, there was a stream between us and the sand dunes. And Ron had on sneakers, and I had on hiking sandals. So I just walked right out into the stream. I walked across the stream and started climbing the sand dunes. And I went up on the sand dunes and walked around and took some pictures and looked at the view and then came back and slid down the sand dune and walked back across the creek. And I just had a delightful, delightful time. And that's the end of the story. But a possible story, if ego had gotten that, was, you know, Ron should have thought, he should have brought his water shoes. He should have done this with me. You know, I probably could have spent more time on those dunes if he wasn't standing there waiting for me, right? That's the ego. That's lack. This day was not as good as it could have been because, right, in this case, it's his fault. He didn't bring water shoes. I've never even seen him in water shoes, although he does claim to have some. So, you know, we're not just talking about lack of money here. Anytime that you think things should be different than they are, that's the thought of lack, right? Anytime you think things should be different than they are, that is the thought of lack. So thoughts relating to lacking or needing something, the sense that something is missing, wanting things to be different, feeling bored, complaining. They're all related. All of that just upholds the ego. Number 10. Thoughts that push you to be constantly doing something, a feeling of restlessness, the need for constant mental stimulation. And I'll tell you, in today's world, boy, those phones are the perfect example. You know how everybody sits down and immediately pulls out their... Did you just put your... Oh, you put your pen down. I thought maybe... I saw her put something down to the corner of my eye, and I thought she quickly put her phone down. But, you know, you see it, right? You see it in restaurants. You see it at bus stops. You see it in the living room of your house. If there's nothing going on, or even if there is something going on, you know, people watch TV. I watch kids do this. Kids meaning people in Jasmine's generation. What do they call them? The millennials or whatever? Millennials?
Millennials.
I couldn't do this because I'm old. But she'll watch TV and play on her phone at the same time and not miss what she's watching. I don't know how they do that. If I was playing on my phone, I'd miss what was on the TV, right? But that need for mental stimulation, I can't, you know, if you're a millennial, I can't even just sit here and watch TV. TV alone is not enough mental stimulation for a millennial, right? That's just upholding the ego. And that doesn't mean, I mean, it's okay to use your phone, you know, when you need to. I mean, they're very useful tools. I got my phone right here in front of me in case I want to read from the course because I got the course on my phone, right? But to have to go to it because you can't have a moment without your mind being active, that's just the ego. In fact, it says here, if you were to slow down and not keep yourself and your mind so busy, you might experience the divine self. And that would diminish the ego's power. To stay in power, the ego has to keep you busy and absorbed in the world of thoughts. Number 11. Thoughts designed to stir up emotions or create drama. And the first thing that pops into my mind now is teenage girls. You know, I love it whenever I'm in line, you know, at a grocery store or somewhere with about four or five teenage girls either in front of me or behind me, because they're always, did you hear what she said? And right? It's just so high drama. But what are they doing at that age? They're strengthening their ego. And they thrive on drama because the ego thrives on drama, right? So any kind of thought that really stirs up a lot of emotion or creates a lot of drama, it can even be, you know, thinking about all of your problems and how are you going to solve all of these problems. That's all just upholding the ego. The ego loves problems and drama because they give the false self something to do and a way to feel important, to feel like somebody, even if that's somebody whose life is a mess. There's no better way to create drama and problems than by stirring up emotions. I remember, I didn't know that I was doing this. I do still check email because, you know, that's what you got to do in today's world. But I used to check email compulsively. And one day I was watching this TV show and there was this woman standing in front of a bunch of people. They were all there to see a painting revealed or a statue revealed or something. And she had something to do with this. She wasn't the artist, but she might have been the publicist or something. She had something to do with this event. And she was standing there looking around. She almost looked like a chicken with her head turning. And she goes, "Who wants to talk to me? Who wants to talk to me?" And when she did, I thought, "Oh, that's what I'm doing when I'm checking email. I'm really, who wants to talk to me? You know, I'm looking for somebody who wants to talk to me." And I saw that in me, and I decided, you know what? I mean, I still check email, but it doesn't need to be this compulsive email checking, because all that is doing is stirring up that feeling of I'm somebody because people want to talk to me, right? So, you know, watch yourself for all of these things, especially in today's world with technology. These things can be so... Facebook, right? How many likes did I get? How many likes did I get on that? And what I think is sad, funny and sad, is when people, only 30 people like that. How come nobody's paying attention to me? Right? 45 people liked the same picture on her page, but only 30 liked it on my page. You know, I mean, this is the ego. This is us upholding the ego. Number 12, thoughts that contain should and other demands for us to be a certain way. This is what is called the superego. The superego is the... You know, some people mistake the superego for the observer when you start talking about the observer and the witness, because you have the ego, and the superego is kind of above it and can see the ego. But the superego is not the observer, because the superego is judging and shoulding. You should not have said that. You know, blah, 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 blah. It's like the internal negative criticizing parent, right? That's the superego. And the superego is really a part of the ego. And again, it just keeps the ego very, very strong, listening to the superego, believing the superego. So that's the particular list that she has. It's 12 different general. This book is going to get much more specific. But 12 different general ways that we uphold our false self. And we want to start catching ourselves doing these things so that we can stop it, right? Oh, good. Looky there. Sherry typed up the list for you. So if you want, you can just copy that and paste it in a Word document or something. You got it done. Thank you, Sherry. So next in this book, I'll just read to you. She says, becoming familiar with the thoughts in your thought stream is essential in freeing yourself from them. In service to this, she says, take a moment to write down some of your thoughts. Can you find any that don't come from the ego? Then look at your thoughts more closely to see what your ego is up to. And some of you may know that I was given an assignment from Spirit once for 3 days to carry just a little bitty notebook, one that's about the size of an index card, so I could carry it in my back pocket or carry it in my purse, to carry a little bitty notebook with me for 3 days. And every time I caught myself daydreaming, write down what I was daydreaming about. And I did this for 3 days. Every time I caught myself daydreaming, I was imagining, you know, I remember some of the things now, like I was imagining my dad criticizing me for letting my dog tear up the flower beds in the backyard, right? And you know, just whatever I was imagining in my head, I would write down. And then after the 3 days, Spirit said, now go through, look at each of the things you wrote down, and write down the content of that story. And I knew what content meant. So, for example, when I was imagining my dad criticizing me for letting my dog tear up the flower beds, the content of that I called attack and defense. Because I was imagining my dad attacking me, and in my mind I had these defense stories that I was going to say to my dad. Right? So I wrote down, that's an attack and defense story. I might have found myself worrying about something. I write down, that was fear. I might have found myself thinking about how ugly I am, how fat I am, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's unworthiness. And I went through and I wrote down the content of every story that I had written down over the last 3 days. And when I was done, I was shocked. It felt to me like I had been eating a diet of junk food, you know, with nothing but junk food at the thought level. Because as I looked at each of the stories, you know, when you're just listening to the story, you're fooled into thinking there's some validity to thinking about that. But when you write down the stories and then you write down the content, when you see what the ego is really up to, you realize why you feel as lousy as you do. I mean, it just, you know, it's a diet of attack and defense and guilt and blame, and, you know, it's not wholesome, to use Thich Nhat Hanh's words. It's a very unwholesome thought diet. So that's what she's recommending here. Write down some of your thoughts. And I think you should do it live. I think you should get a little notebook like I did. You know, you can go to the store and buy them. They're about 3x5. Carry it around with you. And when you catch yourself daydreaming, write it down. And then, what's the content of that thought? And you will be shocked at how junked up your mind is. And don't feel guilty for it. We're here, remember what she says, becoming familiar with the thoughts in your thought stream is essential to freeing yourself from them. That's the purpose, right? We want to become familiar so that we can begin to set ourselves free. If we're thinking and not noticing, guess what? We just stay there. We want to start noticing what we're doing to ourselves with our thought processes. And then she says, after you write down these thoughts, here's her way of, I just told you the way I looked at what my ego was up to. She's now going to share her way of looking at what the ego is up to. So first write down all the thoughts, and then she says, what is your ego up to? Is it trying to be right? Remember, that was one of the things on the list of 12 we just looked at. If it's trying to be right, it's upholding itself. Is it trying to be in control by pretending to know? Is that what's happening in that story? Is it trying to be better than others? Are you imagining yourself, you know, one-upping somebody in your mind? Is it trying to measure up when you don't believe that you do? Are you trying to, you know, imagine what you're going to say so that you'll look good to someone else? Is it trying to fix the past? Is it trying to get a good future or be secure and safe in the future? Is it trying to make yourself small to maintain a negative self-image or to appear non-threatening to others? Is it trying to impress others or gain respect or something else? Is it trying to be nice in order to get love or something else from others? Is it trying to manipulate others in ways to get what you want? Is it trying to fix other people so that you can feel good about yourself, or that so you can feel better than others? Or I would just say, so that they're living the way you want them to live. All right, I want you to be this way, so I'm going to fix you and make you that way. Are you trying to get help or sympathy or create drama by complaining? Are you trying to quiet the superego by getting everything right by being absolutely perfect? And so these are some of the things she says you can look for as well. But the recommendation is literally to take some time to write down what you find yourself thinking about and then look at that more deeply. How you could ask the question, in fact, I don't have Michael Langford's book in front of me, but he asks a question in his book that's something like, how is this thought upholding the ego? Right? You could just ask that with everything that you write down. How is this story that was just running in my mind upholding the ego? So that's, you know, Michael Langford's way of doing this same thing, right? Looking at our thinking and noticing that it's the ego.
So how do we fix it?
Huh?
How do we fix it?
Well, first of all, the noticing is a part of the fixing. Because when you notice, you bring awareness to it. So that alone is part of the fixing. The second part of the fixing is you have to start catching yourself doing it again and basically stop, shift your attention. So, you know, it's kind of like saying, how do you quit drinking? If you're an alcoholic, how do you quit drinking? Part of that is you quit drinking, right? That's part of the answer, right? You may need support, you may need other people to help you, you may need to go to a gentle healing group, do the gentle healing homework, but you got to quit drinking.
Faith, trust.
Yeah, faith, trust, but you got to quit drinking.
Yeah.
Right? That's how you quit drinking, you quit drinking. So you have to just quit thinking the thoughts. You catch yourself thinking, and you stop it. You shift your attention, you move into rest, accept, and trust, you practice self-inquiry. You know, but you got to get out of those thoughts. Okay, subtle ways the ego hides is the next section. I'm about out of time here, so I might kind of start skipping around a little bit. But she says the ego always has an agenda, and the basic agenda, of course, is to keep itself strong. And it says, in the beginning, when you start looking at your ego can be glaringly obvious. You know, you're screaming at somebody. You notice you're being really selfish and not sharing, you know. But she says, as you advance spiritually, genuinely advance, the ego becomes more subtle. You're not screaming at people anymore. You aren't, you know, being greedy anymore. I mean, you've really kind of transcended some things, but the ego is still there. And so she says, the more spiritually advanced you are, the more careful you have to be to see the subtle ways that the ego hides. And one common way that she lists is that for spiritual people is this subtle feeling of I'm right or I'm superior. Right? I'm right or I'm superior. So these are the types of things you want to watch for. And then she says, actually, anything you say about I is bound to have some ego in it, right? And remember, a couple weeks ago, I discovered that one of the things that I had kind of been identifying with, although I hope it's true and I hope it remains to be true, it's my identification with it was the problem, which is, you know, kind of an I'm genuine, I walk my talk, you can trust me, but an identification. And the identification with that is still ego, right? So it gets very, very tricky the more advanced you get spiritually to find the ego because it's hiding in more subtle ways. Now she says, here's some sentences that you might hear come out of your mouth that will help you to discover where the ego is still hiding. And these, of course, are just examples. But one is, he sure likes to eat. You hear that? Implying that he eats too much. That's ego. He sure likes to eat. Another is, I do not understand why she talks so much, right? Implying that her behavior is abnormal or strange. Or what is going on with that? You know, like somebody else is really stupid. He is being so nice today. Like he's never ever nice. What's up with him? Why is he being nice today? I told you so. You see, I'm always right. I cannot stand to see him wasting his life like that, right? Things should be different. She did not do what I told her to. And of course, if she had, everything would have been okay because I'm always right, okay? That's what happens when you do that, just implying you're always wrong, right? Right? He never listens to me. Again, I'm right. If he listened to me, his life would be perfect. She doesn't know anything about handling money. Again, that feeling of superiority, because that implies I do know something about handling money. It also says that, you know, sometimes the ego likes to predict the future. It likes to think it knows what's going to happen. It's like, if I don't get that job, I am never going to find another one. You know, it's a ridiculous statement in the first place. But again, it's the ego, you know, that idea. Also, these types of statements, I am going to hate getting together with them, right? And just there's something wrong with them, and I know how I'm going to feel in the future. I remember once I told Danielle, oh, I gotta quit. I have to quit after this. I remember once I told Danielle we were taking a walk and there was this dog following us and we were about to go on a busy road. And I told Danielle, I said, I couldn't take it to watch a dog. You know, I couldn't stand to watch a dog get hit today. So I started yelling at the dog and acting mean to the dog just to get the dog to turn around and go home. I didn't want to get hit by a car. But I knew that I couldn't handle it if I saw a dog get hit by a car. 5 minutes later, we saw another dog. It appeared to get hit by a car. What actually happened was it jumped out of the back of a pickup. But from our angle, it looked like it got hit by a car. Guess what? I handled it just fine. And that taught me a big lesson, that even when I think I know how I'm going to feel in a particular situation in the future, that's just the ego's imagination, right? And we were almost done, but it is time for me to stop, so I'm just going to stop a little bit early. I think you got plenty of food to chew on over the next week as you're watching your ego. So let me give us our homework assignment. Homework assignment A, workbook lessons 229 to 235. And of course, your daily meditation, which might be awareness watching awareness. It might be loving consciousness, or it might be abandon release method, but you want to do it for 20 to 40 minutes each day. And of course, we want to keep practicing that loving all method. That's a foundation for us. And then homework assignment B, you're going to read chapter 1 from The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. And you can read that from any of the versions of that book that you happen to have in your house, or you can read that online, and Ken will put the link in the homework assignment. So workbook lessons 229 to 235, daily meditation for 20 to 40 minutes, the loving all method, and reading chapter 1 from The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. And that's that. So thank you very much, everyone, for continuing to be committed to gentle healing. And if I don't see you before, I will see you next Tuesday. Bye.